All right, we'll let the musicians go down while you're turning in your Bibles to the book of Esther, chapter 6. All right, out of respect for the Word of God, let's stand together as I begin reading there with verse 1. On that night could not the king sleep, and he commanded to bring the book of the records of the Chronicles, and they were read before the king. And it was found written that Mordecai had told of Bigthana and Teresh, two of the king's chamberlains, the keepers of the door, who sought to lay hands on the king Ahasuerus. And the king said, "What honor and dignity hath been done to Mordecai for this?" Then said the king's servants that ministered unto him, "There is nothing done for him."
Thank you, Brother Chandler. Our text tonight takes us into the midnight bedchambers of the most powerful man in the world at his time. The Bible gives us the royal name of Ahasuerus, but history records him as Xerxes the First or Xerxes the Great. It is believed that Ahasuerus was sort of a royal title like Pharaoh or Caesar that could be applied to any of the kings of Persia. Xerxes was the king of the mighty Persian Empire. It stretched from India in the east to Ethiopia in the west. It was divided into 127 provinces, and it has been said by historians that no king ever ruled with such absolute authority as the kings of Persia did over their domains. The book of Esther gives us the story of Xerxes and his wife Vashti. And Xerxes was throwing a great party for his lords and noblemen and showing off his wealth and power in preparation for a great raid of the Greeks. He was going to take his army across into Europe and conquer the Greeks. And so he's throwing this great party, this great promotional party to fire his noblemen up. But he got drunk. And at this drunken party, he commanded his wife Vashti to come parade herself before his lords and noblemen. Some believe that he expected her to come nearly undressed or in some way that would have humiliated her and debased her. She had some class, had some dignity, and she refused to come. She was not going to humiliate herself for this drunken king and this drunken party. Well, the result of that was that he, to save face, divorced her. But then after a little while, he got lonely and wanted his wife back. Well, his advisors did not want Vashti coming back because they knew that if she got back in that place, it'd be for them. So they proposed this idea of a Miss Persia pageant. But it was a little different in that the women that were chosen really didn't have much choice. They were chosen out of all the provinces and brought to the capital. One of them was going to be chosen to be the king's primary wife, and the others would simply be part of his harem. At this time, we're introduced to an orphan named Esther. She had been raised by her older cousin, Mordecai, who was old enough to be her father and had raised her as though she was his own daughter. Esther was considered extremely beautiful. I have a feeling that she looked quite a bit like Mrs. Raspberry. And she's not even in here, so I need my daughter to pass that on to her. But anyway, she was considered extremely beautiful. In fact, she was so beautiful that when all the other women were dressing their hair and putting on makeup, and nothing wrong with that, but she required nothing other than her own natural beauty, and she was going to win the heart of the king. But she was discovered in this Miss Persia contest, not one that I would want my daughters in, but there was really not much of a choice. The women were chosen, they were sent off, and that's just how it was under the Persian government. Now, she was a Jew, or you might say a Jewess, but she was commanded to keep this secret because there was still a measure of anti-Semitism, a hatred for the Jews in ancient Persia. Now, the beauty that Esther had and God's providence placed her in a position to later save all the Jews of the Persian Empire from the wicked plot of a man named Haman. Haman was an Agagite. He was a descendant of the king of the Amalekites, Agag, that if you remember, Saul had spared. Remember, Saul was supposed to destroy all the Amalekites,
But they saved the best, and they saved the spared the king and some others apparently. And Samuel killed the king, but apparently others had continued on. And now 500 years later, it has come full circle as Mordecai, who was also of the same family as Saul, is going to be, bring about the downfall of this Agagite when the Agagite tries to bring about the fall of the Jews. So it's interesting how all of that worked out over the centuries, and yet God's providence in control. Now, after Esther became queen, Mordecai was at his post in the king's gate. Let's go to chapter 2 and verse 21. Chapter 2, verse 21. And it says, "In those days, while Mordecai sat in the king's gate, two of the king's chamberlains, Bigthan and Teresh, or Teresh, of those which kept the door, were wroth and sought to lay hand on the king Ahasuerus. And the thing was known to Mordecai, who told it unto Esther the queen, and Esther certified the king thereof in Mordecai's name. And when inquisition was made of the matter, it was found out. Therefore they were both hanged on a tree, and was written in the book of the Chronicles before the king." Now somebody tell me what was done for Mordecai. Answer, nothing. Not a thing. And so it details exactly what took place. Mordecai overheard this conspiracy to kill the king, a very big deal in Persia. And he told Esther. Esther certified it in Mordecai's name. Inquisition was made. It was found out. The men were hung. And yet nothing was done for Mordecai. This was a serious breach of protocol. A serious breach of protocol and propriety. To overlook, to not reward this man that had basically saved the king's life. Now we'll come back to that in a second. Let me ask you a few questions. Do you ever feel like your good deeds go unrewarded? Do you sometimes feel like your good deeds never go unpunished? Do you sometimes feel like the good you do does not matter? Or that you're not appreciated for the things that you do? Or that the seed you sow never seems to produce a good harvest? Now, ideally, you and I would not care about such things. We would just do right for rightness sake. And we'd say, you know what? I have the joy of just having done the right thing. But we're human beings, and oftentimes we do like to be recognized or appreciated for the things that we have done. And sometimes people get discouraged and they say, well, what's the difference if I do right or don't do right? Because when I did right, nothing came of it. And so I want to point out some things tonight in what I call a subplot to the story of Esther, this incident with Mordecai and these two chamberlains. And draw some what I think will be some encouraging conclusions for us. Notice first, a good deed undertaken. A good deed undertaken. We just read in chapter 2 about the plot between the two chamberlains to murder the king. Mordecai found out. He overheard and he knew what their plans were. Now he has a decision to make. He can speak up or he can be silent. That's his choice. I can speak up on behalf of the king, or I can be silent. No one else knew that he knew this. So he had the decision. He had the choice. He could step up, or he could fall back. He could get involved, or he could stay out of it. And Mordecai had the courage to make the right decision. I said in my class this morning in Sunday school that courage is the rarest of all virtues. But without courage, you're not going to practice the other virtues consistently. Sometimes it takes courage to be honest. Sometimes it takes courage to speak the truth. Sometimes it takes courage to stand for the Bible. Sometimes it takes courage to do the right thing. And Mordecai here risked his own life by putting his name to this and getting involved. What if the king had been killed and the next regime, there'd been a coup or something? Now he is a marked man for standing up for the last king. You see that there were a lot of things that could have gone wrong. Would he have to pay a price for doing the right thing? Back in 1964, I know many of you have heard of this, but a woman named Catherine Genovese was murdered in Queens, New York. She was 29 years old. She was known to her friends as Kitty. Kitty Genovese. She was going home one night when she was attacked and stabbed. She began screaming, and the killer ran away. He was afraid. He ran away. She ran to the back of the building but could not get in because the door was locked. She fell down bleeding on the doorstep. Because no one got involved, the killer returned, found her, stabbed her, raped her, stole her $49 from her wallet, and left her to die. What shocked the nation were reports and studies that found that almost 40 people had heard her cries for help, but not one had tried to help, even by calling the police or calling for an ambulance. No one wanted to get involved. As the story gained interest, many of the neighbors were interviewed and asked why they didn't even call the police. All kinds of excuses, including, "I was tired, so I went back to bed. We were afraid. We didn't want to get involved." One woman said, "I didn't want my husband to get involved." And many of them said, "I thought someone else would do it." This became such a study that it was given a name. It's called the Genovese syndrome, named after Kitty Genovese. It's also called the bystander effect. The bystander effect, which simply states that the greater the number of bystanders, the less likely it is that any of them will help. If a bunch of people know that something's, that the more people are standing around, the less likely it is that any of them will step up and do the right thing to help. They'll all think someone else will do it. And that's a related diagnosis called SEP, somebody else's problem. Somebody else's problem. This is defined as a psychological effect where individuals or populations of individuals choose to disassociate themselves from an issue that may be in critical need of recognition. That's somebody else's problem. Back in 2011, a 2-year-old girl in China, Wang Yu, was hit by a small white van, then run over by a large truck when she was not moved by bystanders. A total of 18 people ignored her, some going so far as to walk around the blood. The girl was left for 7 minutes before a recycler picked up the toddler and called for help. But the child died 8 days later. How can you walk past a toddler? Well, that's the bystander effect. Why should I get involved? Somebody else's problem. Can you think of any biblical examples of the bystander effect? How about a certain parable of the Good Samaritan? There's a wounded man dying in the ditch. A priest walks by. He sees him. He looks away. Somebody else's problem. He goes on his way. A Levite walks by. I got things to do. Somebody else's problem. Someone will be along. Not my fault he's in the ditch. Someone else's problem, you see. And Jesus commended the Samaritan because he went to where the man was. He got down in the ditch. He got blood on his clothes. He dragged him out. He took care of him. And he made sure that he survived. And Jesus commended him because he took care of his neighbor. But how easy it is for us to say, well, that's somebody else's problem. Why should I be concerned with such a thing? Well, spiritually speaking, I see that Satan is having his way with this old world. And I ask, are we doing anything about it? He destroys lives, and Christians stand by and say, well, that's somebody else's problem. There's churches everywhere. If they wanted to go to church, they could. Well, they could. Well, man, 27 years ago when I was a teenager, yeah, I could have went to church, but I wasn't going to go until a Christian cared enough about me to invite me about 1,000 times. Well, that's exaggerating. It's only 753 times. But I could have gone to church, but I wasn't going to go to church until a Christian cared about me and made me his problem. That's why I'm saved and standing here tonight. We can't just have a bystander effect spiritually and say, well, someone else will witness to them. How many people have witnessed to you in your lifetime? Not very many have witnessed to me. You know how many gospel tracts I've ever found? Not very many. When I used to work in restaurants, you know how many gospel tracts Christians gave me at the cash register? Zero. Every once in a while, traveling or something, I'll find a gospel tract from a couple of churches around here or somewhere else. And, you know, when my wife and I went to, all of our family went to Weatherford this week, and I stopped at Racetrack, because you just do that, you know, you go to Racetrack and wherever I am, and to get a soda. And I left one of my smiley face gospel tracts in the pump. You know who got it? My dad. I left two, I actually put one on both sides of the little advertisement section and left. And my dad said, they were out that morning. He said, look what I found. One of my gospel tracts. I said, well, you need to read it and get saved. But how many gospel tracts have you been given? I haven't been given many. How many people have invited you to church off the, you know, and then you say, well, I already go to church. But how many people have ever invited you to church? Not very many. How many people have visited your house? I've lived in Weatherford, as an adult, Weatherford, Fort Worth, Arlington, Garland, Wiley, Nevada. And one time a Baptist preacher visited our house in Arlington. And one time Jehovah's Witnesses came by our house in Nevada. I'm just saying that it seems like the Christian world is like, well, that's somebody else's problem. Well, folks, maybe it's our problem. Maybe we need to be concerned about those who are not being witnessed to and invited and cared about and try to win them to Christ. But it's easier to say, well, someone else will witness to them. Someone else will call the cops. Someone else will call the ambulance. Someone else will run a bus ministry. Someone else will teach that class. Someone else will give to missions. Someone else will serve. It'll get done at the church. Someone else will do it. But Mordecai saw the situation and saw the threat to the king. And he could have said, well, I'm a Jew. That's a Persian. What do I care about some Persian? He's not one of my people. But instead, he did the right thing. And he took the risk. So we see a good deed undertaken. Number two, we see a good deed unrewarded. Unrewarded. It was no small matter to plot against the king, but it was also no small matter for Mordecai to go unrewarded. That's why later on, when the king found out what had happened, he was beside himself. Why wasn't something done? It was a total breach of protocol and propriety. But nothing was done. It was written in the Chronicles, but nothing was done. Many of us, I think, might have been deeply offended and seriously disappointed if we had been in Mordecai's place. What? No recognition? No reward? Matthew Henry, the great commentator of old, wrote this, that little honor is done to those who best deserve it. Little honor is done to those who best deserve it and are fittest for it and would do most good with it. Go with me to Ecclesiastes. Go with me there just because we don't go there very often. Ecclesiastes chapter 9. Ecclesiastes chapter 9. This is a great little passage. Ecclesiastes 9 and verse 14. Ecclesiastes 9 verse 14. There was a little city and few men within it, and there came a great king against it and besieged it and built great bulwarks against it. And that's a serious problem. Verse 15, now there was found in it a poor wise man, and he by his wisdom delivered the city, yet no man remembered that same poor man. Then said I, wisdom is better than strength. Nevertheless, the poor man's wisdom is despised, and his words are not heard. See, folks, we just live in a world, you know, God is just, but people are not always just. As I said this morning, the world's topsy-turvy. Evil is called good. Good is called evil. Sweet is called bitter. Bitter is called sweet. Foolishness is called wise, and wisdom is called foolish today. And unfortunately, many times those who, by their wisdom or by their decisions, help others go unrewarded and often forgotten. When you think about Winston Churchill, probably most responsible for saving Western civilization at World War II, and as soon as the war was over, the people of England voted him out of office. Isn't that amazing? Voted him out of office. And so sometimes good deeds go unrewarded. People who should be condemned are treated as heroes, and people who should be treated as heroes are sometimes condemned. Now, what's worse, as we read on, is we find that a wicked man actually got his reward. Go to chapter 3. Chapter 3 and verse 1. Chapter 3, verse 1. After these things, did King Ahasuerus promote Haman, the son of Hammedatha the Agagite, and advanced him and set his seat above all the princes that were with him. I think this was a security measure. I think the king got paranoid. Hitler did something similar after the failed suitcase bombing, the briefcase bombing, and he promoted someone to be over his personal guard. And I think this is what took place with Haman, where the king promoted him over everybody else. And I think his primary job was to protect the king. Verse 2, and all the king's servants that were in the king's gate bowed and reverenced Haman, for the king had so commanded concerning him. But Mordecai bowed not, nor did him reverence. Now, why did Mordecai get away with that? Because the Jews had a special exemption because of their religious faith. They were not required to bow like the other Persians were required to bow. But what I see beyond that is that here Mordecai is the one who saved the king's life, and yet Haman is the one who's getting the promotion. Does that seem fair? Mordecai is forgotten and Haman got the promotion. In verse number 5 it says, when Haman saw that Mordecai bowed not, nor did him reverence, then was Haman full of wrath. And he thought scorn to lay hands on Mordecai alone, for they had showed him the people of Mordecai, the Jews. Wherefore Haman sought to destroy all the Jews that were throughout the whole kingdom of Ahasuerus, even the people of Mordecai. So Haman said, I'm going to get Mordecai, but I don't just want to get Mordecai. I'm going to wipe out every Jew that might be like Mordecai throughout the entire kingdom. So he left Mordecai alone while he began to work his own plot to destroy all the Jewish people, which would, of course, include Mordecai. But we see a good deed undertaken, a good deed unrewarded. Notice third, a good deed uncovered. A good deed uncovered. You see, you have to remember, folks, that God is still in control. Did you know that in the book of Esther, God is not mentioned? And yet He's there. Amen? His hand is in the glove of history. He's the one moving things around. And we have to remember that God is in control even when you can't see Him in control. He's still in control. Our obligation, folks, listen, our obligation as Christians, our obligation is to do the right thing. Whether anyone appreciates you for it, whether anyone pats you on the back, whether you get a plaque for it, a trophy, or recognized, whether anyone says thank you, or whether they spit in your face for it, you and I are to do the right thing and let God handle the consequences. We go to chapter 6 and verse 1. We find God, I believe, intervening that night. You know, God can put someone to sleep, but God can also keep someone awake. In verse 1, it says, on that night could not the king sleep. And he commanded to bring the book of records of the Chronicles. You ever had a night you couldn't sleep? I get insomnia sometimes. You know what I do? I sit up and write until I get sleepy. Sometimes I don't go to sleep. But one thing you can do when you get real sleepy is read a boring book. And you sit there and you start reading that boring book, and all of a sudden it starts emerging and you're gone. And so the king couldn't sleep, so he said, all right, bring in the Chronicles. Read the Chronicles to me. So they began reading these government records. And it says in verse number 2, and it was found written that Mordecai had told of Bigthana and Teresh, two of the king's chamberlains, the keepers of the door, etc. And verse 3, and it says, the king said, what honor and dignity hath been done to Mordecai for this? Then said the king's servants that ministered unto him, there is nothing done for him. Verse 4, and the king said, who is in the court? Now Haman was come into the outward court of the king's house to speak unto the king, to hang Mordecai on the gallows he had prepared for him. One of the great stories in the Bible. Haman is going to have Mordecai hung on a 75-foot tall gallows. Almost 8 stories tall, he's going to have Mordecai hung on it, and he just needs to get the king's permission. And so he's come to the king's house, and the king hears him outside. And in verse 5, the king's servant said, and behold, Haman standeth in the court. And the king said, let him come in. So Haman came in. And the king said unto him, what should be done unto the man whom the king delighteth to honor? Now Haman thought in his heart, to whom would the king delight to do honor more than to myself? No ego problem with Haman. What should I do with the man the king wants to honor? Haman says, obviously it's me. And so he's thinking, what would I like? And so he starts listing some honors that he would like. And he says in verse 8, let the royal apparel be brought which the king useth to wear, and the horse that the king rideth upon, and the crown royal which is set upon his head, and let this apparel and horse be delivered to the hand of one of the king's most noble princes, that they may array the man with all whom the king delighteth to honor, and bring him on horseback through the street of the city, and proclaim before him, thus shall it be done to the man whom the king delighteth to honor. Now, I got to stop and say this. I think that he's thought about this before. I mean, this is a lot of detail. I think he's dreamed about this before, and he's thinking, this is my day. And I love verse 10. Then the king said to Haman, make haste and take the apparel and the horse, as thou hast said, and do even so to Mordecai the Jew that sitteth at the king's gate. Let nothing fail of all that thou hast spoken. Who does he hate more than anyone on earth? Who did he build a 7-story gallows to hang? And now the king, the tables have turned. Go do everything you just said and do it to Mordecai. Well, can you imagine Mordecai getting up that morning, going to work? And he gets there, and there's the king's horse and the king's apparel, and there's Haman. What do you want? I'm here on the king's business. Let me help you get this coat on. He puts the king's robes on, the crown on his head. Let me help you on your horse. And begins to parade him through town. And Haman has to say, this is what the king does when he wants to honor someone. And he's walking him through town, all the way through the capital. And I think he's probably trying to hurry. Yeah, this is what the king does. And Mordecai's like, whoa, slow down. And pulling up on the reins a little bit. Just an amazing story. And then it says in verse 12, then, and Mordecai came again to the king's gate, but Haman hasted to his house, mourning, having his head covered. You see, there's nothing the king could have done back then that would have been better than what just happened. Now you think about that. If when Mordecai saved the king's life, if something had been done for him, would have been some bureaucrat or someone in the government would have brought some little trophy by or some reward, and thanks, good job being a good citizen. And he would have hung the little plaque on his office wall somewhere, and his, you know, and that would have been it. This is a lot better. Yeah, a lot better. In fact, it's the first step towards Haman getting hung on his own gallows, and the Jews being saved. Sometimes we are denied small rewards down here to get bigger rewards in the future. In Matthew 6, Jesus said, take heed that you do not your alms or your charitable giving before men to be seen of them. Otherwise, you have no reward of your Father which is in heaven. That's important. If you're doing it to be seen, all you're going to get is that reward. You got saw. But you're not going to get anything from God for it. Amen? You're just not. You have a choice. You can either have the Father's approval, or you can have man's approval, but you can't have both. You just can't. Now, if someone wants to give money so a hospital is named after them, and that's fine. Hey, the hospital's built, but that's for their own. They got what they did. They got what they paid for. And I'm not against that sort of thing. But when we give our alms, give it in secret. Don't even let your left hand know what your right hand's doing. Just give it. Don't say, hey, everybody, look at me, I'm giving. Boy, let me tell everybody how much I increased my faith promise missions this year. Well, why are you doing that? Because you want others to think that you're generous? It should be done in secret. He said that's what the hypocrites do, that they may have glory of men. Verily I say unto you, they have their reward. So they got their reward. But he said, but when thou doest alms, let not thy left hand know what thy right hand doeth, that thine alms may be in secret, and thy Father which seeth in secret himself shall reward thee openly. So we have a choice between having men's applause down here or the reward that comes from God. It's far better to have the rewards that come from God. In Ephesians 6, God told those who are in a life of servitude, the servants, in Ephesians 6, he said, with goodwill doing service as to the Lord and not to men, knowing that whatsoever good thing any man doeth, the same shall he receive of the Lord, whether he be bond or free. And Hebrews 6 says, God is not unrighteous to forget your work and labor of love, which you have showed toward his name, and that you have ministered to the saints and do minister. God would be unrighteous to forget your work, but God is not unrighteous. He will not forget our work. Good deeds are written in the king's chronicles. They're written in his book. Now, In fact, even Jesus even said in Mark 9:41 that whosoever shall give you a cup of water to drink in my name because you belong to Christ, verily I say unto you, he shall not lose his reward. He even keeps track of little cups of water. Now, it's easy to get discouraged and say, well, preacher, it's been years and years, and I don't think I'll ever see the fruit of my labor. But the Bible said, Jesus said, behold, I come quickly, my reward is with me, to give every man according as his work shall be. If the rewards are not down here, the rewards are going to be up there. Now, you may be very selfless, and you may say, well, I don't need any rewards. And, you know, and that's great. To be honest, in my life right now, I'm just so thankful that God saved me and what God has done in my life, that God, I don't need any more blessings for me to serve God the rest of my life. I feel like I would serve God just because I love Him the rest of my life if He gave me no further blessings. I feel like I've been blessed beyond measure already. But I got to be honest, I do look forward to rewards in heaven too. Is that wrong? Why would God promise us that except He wants us to look forward to it? Preacher, that's selfish. Maybe, I don't know. I'm just telling you, being honest with you. I would like to have some crowns to cast at Jesus' feet. I would like to have, if there's rewards being passed, I'd like to have something I can give back to Him. And we must remember that God is the one who gives the rewards, and He is the one who does not forget our labors. In 1 Timothy 5, it says, likewise also the good works of some are manifest beforehand, and they that are otherwise cannot be hid. So some people's good works, they're seen and recognized beforehand, but others will not be hidden when we stand before Christ. The judgment seat will set all records straight. The chronicles will be opened. And the Lord may say, what was done for him because of that bus route that he ran for all those years? What was done for him for going soul winning? What was done for them for giving to missions? Well, an angel may say, well, nothing was done for them. Well, let's reward him now. Let's reward him now. I'm using my imagination there, but I think that's a beautiful picture, don't you? Now, this wasn't even the end of Mordecai's reward. If you're still in Esther, look at chapter 7 and verse 10. Chapter 7 and verse 10. So they hanged Haman on the gallows he had prepared for Mordecai. We call those boomerangs of bitterness. Yeah, you're bitter and hateful, it's going to come right back at you. Yeah, that's what happened to Haman. Then was the king's wrath pacified. Go to chapter 8, verse 1. On that day did the king Ahasuerus give the house of Haman, the Jews' enemy, unto Esther the queen. And Mordecai came before the king, for Esther had told what he was unto her. And the king took off his ring, which he had taken from Haman, and gave it unto Mordecai. And Esther set Mordecai over the house of Haman. So Haman got what could have been considered Mordecai's promotion. But in the end, Mordecai got everything that was Haman's. Look at chapter 8, verse 15. And Mordecai went out from the presence of the king in royal apparel of blue and white, with a great crown of gold and with a garment of fine linen and purple. And that wasn't temporary. That was his new permanent position and his new permanent uniform. Look at chapter 10, verse 3. Chapter 10, verse 3. For Mordecai the Jew was next unto King Ahasuerus, and great among the Jews, and accepted of the multitude of his brethren, seeking the wealth of his people and speaking peace to all his seed. What can we learn from this? God's in control. Doing right is his own reward. And even when we don't see any good results from it, even sometimes when it seems like there are negative results for doing the right thing, we should still do the right thing. And God will take care of everything sooner or later. Maybe sooner, maybe later. That's where faith comes in. Mordecai got his payday. Just wasn't when he was expecting it.